How do you market a new idea when it could potentially disrupt one of the biggest industries in the world? We're going to unravel that next with my co-host, Amanda Russell. Let's get on with the show. Hey, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode today of the Marketing Companion. You know, we are almost through with the 12th year of this show. And one of the things that is so remarkable to me is that we keep coming up with new aspects of marketing to talk about. We've talked about, B2B and B2C and influence and AI and just about everything you can think of. And marketing is endlessly fascinating. And today we're going to talk about marketing an idea. What if you have an idea that is burning in your heart that you need to get out to the world? It's not a product, it's not a company, but it's important nonetheless. So we're going to get personal today. We're going to get a little emotional today with my guest, Amanda Russell. And it's cool that we're going to talk about this with Amanda, because somehow, Amanda, you and I, we always go down paths that have never been covered before. And last year I was looking at the downloads, and you had the number one downloads on the podcast last year. So you're keeping us on our toes.
I mean, thank you, I'm kind of just astounded, because you have such great shows. It must have been our topics.
But the topics are always coming out of your head, and this one is too.
So this one I need your help with. This was an interesting one for me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about where we're going today. Tell us a little bit about your background as an elite athlete, and what happened to you along the way that created a crisis in your life.
Yes. So my first life was as a distance runner, and I'm from a small town in Northern Canada, and sport was really my way out. Like, it was like a ticket to a bigger world, and running specifically, because running doesn't cost money, and anyone can access running. It's not like you need coaches or you have to be at a certain court or whatever. And so that's really why I chose that. And I believe very much in sports. And I actually joined a nonprofit, the Andy Roddick Foundation, which their mission is to implement sports programs into schools in underprivileged neighborhoods. And when I heard that, I thought that would have been my mission for a long time, because I saw firsthand how that can keep somebody in school and let them see a bigger world, especially if you're not academic or you don't have resources or whatever it is. But sports, especially in America, are very much a wealthy privilege. And I came to the U.S. on a full Division I track scholarship, and realized very quickly how the mentality was very, very different in the U.S. And the reason that this is important is because this has also become the best metaphor. This is why I got into marketing and business. And I think what makes me good at what I do is the metaphor of running, which is like the best metaphor for life. But for me, it's literal. And applying that, those same methodologies that we used to apply in race training, and race training, like Olympic training, is very different than somebody who wants to run a marathon and they just like clock a number of miles and they build up their mileage, and very different than somebody that just runs. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the way you build a business or the way that you market a product, it's very different. If you work backwards from the brands that are like Apple and Starbucks, the way that they are creating their plans and their strategies and their milestones are very different than a lot of these unknown or middle level brands or challenger brands or brands that fail, which is most. And if you look at sport, it's the same thing. Majority of people do something to check a box. Then there's some, I have them in different categories, right? Some that do it to have an accolade, like finish X number of marathons. And then if you look at like, I'm going to break a world record, I'm going to podium finish for my country. It's a work backwards, very different. And I felt like it was the exact same thing with business. And except that I struggled really badly. My career ended in retrospect, it was a gift, very early, in 2008 before the Beijing Olympics. And, with a stress fracture in my femur that cracked all the way through, which people hear that and they're like, well, that's not possible. It's the biggest, strongest bone in your body. It is possible when your body is in such a deficit that you develop osteoporosis at like age 21. And when all your organs are struggling because your body is under so much stress, from this energy deficit. And I knew about it then, but, and then this propelled an injury cycle. I would never run again. And I thought that it, you know, in our minds, we just correlate that with injury. What I didn't learn, which I've now learned, you know, 15, 20 years later, is that I would create a life with zillions of seemingly unrelated diseases and consequences, including like acute situations with like GI surgeries and colon surgery. I mean, you name it. And I always knew intuitively that it had to have done something to do with all those crazy years and the stress of the organs. And
So
turns
when you
out,
say crazy years, you're talking about intense Olympic level training.
And you're looking at a body, like, I mean, I'm taking running, but I've studied it a lot now, and that's not what I do, right? This is why it's been a very personal project because, and this is why I wanted to talk to you about it too, because I'm like, I have done this for so many businesses in my own life and for other people's brands. For whatever reason, this is such a personal topic. I'm having so much trouble owning it and also seeing it objectively. Because to me, it's very complex and most people don't get it. And there's also a stigma to it because there's also mental battles with it, which, along with that, there's GI issues, there's hormone, you can become thyroid problems, fertility, all being metabolic issues. But then also there's the mental side, that your brain can't shut off. It's like a dopamine hit, that it's like a heroin addict. This need to win, this need to train, this need to do things at a certain level. And it hurts relationships. It hurts. It's great for business, but it hurts a lot of other things in your life. And I see it now, and I think it's only escalated with the NIL and with social media. And I thank God that I wasn't competing when athletes also had to be brands. And when they also had on them. And now I think it's so out of control, and it's not just women. Women experience it at a much more severe degree because of that messes up their ability to have children. So the human bodies are different that way. But it's very much men and women experience this. And the years and years of different diseases and chronic injury and all that stuff, you think that you're going to get better when you finish or when you retire, and you don't. And no one's ever studied that until now. And the Olympic Committee just gave this disease a diagnosis, just as recently as 2014. And they just made a big sponsorship to a friend of mine who's the head of Harvard Medical and Boston Children's Hospital, who had this herself as well and has been studying this. And she's the leading doctor that's done pretty much all the studies on it and is starting like a whole center for it up at Boston. But the issue is that when I started, you know, after going to countless doctors and medical experts and even shrinks, you name it, to figure out what the hell is going on, I started hearing my story being told back to me through the voices of the other elite athletes and medical experts. And but yet most doctors didn't know about it. So there's a problem in terms of like marketing. There's a problem of there is the research, there are the experts, but they are experts, they are medical doctors, they are athletes, they're not marketers, they're not necessarily business people. And the term that it's the diagnosis is called REDS. Well, nobody knows that word at all. And so, like, how do you market, like, even you
Well, it's
teach?
a terrible name, first of all, Reds. I mean, that could
I
be
know,
a, you know, that could be talking about as a slang term for the Soviet Union, or it could be the
yeah.
Cincinnati baseball team, you know. So yeah, I wish it had a different name. But so this is the name of this disease that was, you said it was diagnosed in 2014. It was actually named, right?
Yes. And through that, and then it wasn't until in 2019, a professor at UT, a fellow colleague, got to know me, an older gentleman, and he was a sports documentary director. And he was like, how he was just fascinated with a lot of the athletes and whatever, and the way they trained. And we talked about it one time, and I was like, yeah, I mean, they burn the hell out of you. You're like a racehorse.
Yeah.
And when you're hurt, all they do is rush you to get back on the field. Like, if you have a, it's no different. Like, would you do that with somebody coming back from a heart attack? You wouldn't rush them to get back on the field,
Yeah.
but that's what they do with athletes all day long.
Yeah.
And so I started doing, so he thought this idea would be to do, he was like, why isn't this story told? So as a marketer, I'm like, because nobody cares, nobody knows about it, how do you make people care? We have to do something that is interesting, that gets resonation. And so we thought about a documentary. So over the past, and this is again a side project.
Yeah,
Oh.
well, it is the project, I think. I mean, we're kind of jumping ahead here. That's
So
the big surprise, is Amanda's like been part of this documentary movie, which is awesome. But before we get too far ahead, this is from your website. So I just want to impress on people like how difficult this is, how hard this is. And it says RES is a condition where there's a shortage of energy available to keep up with the demands of exercise on top of essential daily functions, and the body goes into energy saving mode. This can cause serious long-term or even fatal issues like weakened immunity and delayed healing time from injury, cardiovascular issues, hormonal and metabolic diseases, osteoporosis, fertility disturbances, gastrointestinal consequences, and you even mentioned, you know, some of the mental issues. So this, I mean, this is something that a lot of athletes are struggling with. And I wanted to ask you, I think at one time when you first mentioned this to me, oh, it had to be over a year ago, you said that that I don't know if it's, you know, part of the hypothesis or your own view, that it might affect women even to a greater degree because so many coaches train women like men. Is that right? Is that kind of, am I getting that right?
yeah, and it's not men's fault. I want to make that very
Yeah.
clear. This is not a blame men thing at all. In fact, actually, it was women that rallied for equal rights in sports before they could compete in the NCAA and in sports, and that's what they got. So the training never changed. However, I think even for men, the training, especially in the US, trains like no other country I know. And I can say that because I was Canadian, which everyone's like, oh, that's the same thing. And I'm like, no, it's really not. I realized I had never done a real workout in my life coming after, holding a Canadian record and coming to the US and realizing that I actually hadn't really trained, according to them. And the intensity, and then I look at the young kids here and I'm like, oh my God, there's like performance level at age under four. I'm like, so what, 3-year-olds, they're performing? It's crazy. And I am not against sports. That's also the, I'm not against it. This is, we need to bring the sport back to life of what sport really is, because right now sport is I think innately unhealthy. And that's coming from somebody that was my entire life. And ticket, I think scholarships, athletic scholarships should be gone. And I wouldn't be here if we didn't have that. And I know the original reaction is like, what? What the hell? But if you think about, it's the same with the work culture. I know Gary Vaynerchuk, love or hate him, I think he does a very good job, but his whole hustle culture, The stress now is not just on the body, it's in workplaces too. And it's a mentality that is very toxic. And why are we priding people on being able to run in circles or throw a ball? Well, we're not priding people, like, well, we're not rewarding even if you play a violin or if you create some solution to cancer or whatever it is. It's like we are putting so much emphasis on looking, and with that becomes the self-worth thing of like, you gotta look the part, you
Right.
gotta be the part, you gotta look, and there's this pressure. So I
Is
just the
it two
result of
separate issues? You know, so because I'm a like, you know, I'm a big sports fan, right? And you know, and people who have followed me closely know that for many years, you know, I've mentored this kid from an underprivileged family, and you know, I started mentoring him. When he was 7 years old, he was a scrawny little kid, and now he's an elite athlete. And I look at this as his way, like you were talking, it's his way to kind of get out. And it's, you know, it's football. It's a brutal sport. It's not necessarily my choice that he would go this route, but this is what he loves. He lives it and he breathes it. And this could potentially, you know, he got a college scholarship in a few weeks. He is going to graduate from college. He's the first person in his family to ever graduate from college. So there's a lot of, you know, positives. There's a lot of amazing opportunities that come from sports too. Now, you know, one is the pressure and the look and you know, the mental aspect. And then the other one is like the racehorse thing where you know, get them back on the field and have all these like crazy things. Is the discussion really, I mean, there's the mental part and there's the glamour, but really the stuff that's causing red S, isn't it really the insane training regimens that don't really look at long-term implications for the athlete? Or for the human being.
You know, I think they're one and the same. I think that there is the pressure. It's not simple. It's not, and it, trying to explain it almost is hard in my, because in my head it's very clear, but like there's a pressure that is to look that part. Like you need it's intertwined with the pressure of training. And the more that you are off, you have a bad performance, you have a bad game, you have a bad race, the more this, like we did, but we called it brain, they called it brain training, but it was like brainwashing, whatever. I mean, it's great for marketing, like you, that skill carries over, but like how you can, you know, reverse engineer the mind to believe certain things and to tell yourself certain things, and that same training in your mind is going, I had a bad practice, so I'm just gonna, how am I gonna get through this? I'm gonna become more disciplined or more controlled or more, I'm gonna cut this out. I'm gonna start training more intensely, longer hours, more miles, whatever it is. And we hear that all the time, right? We hear like the best athletes are doing it more. And that's what I did. That's what everybody does. And I know you're with your I call him your son, because he's like a son to you. And I do see that. And that's why I originally got involved with the Andy Roddick Foundation, because I was like, kids do that has to change. Kids have to have access, because right now, 80%, so well-to-do, so well, wealthy families in America, which I think was over $150,000 a year, you know, average in America, 80% of these families have kids that play some kind of sport. Guess what the number is for those that are making under $60,000 a year?
20.
That's exactly right.
That was a
20%.
guess, by the way. I didn't. I'm not
Because
trying
they
to
need, you need, so
usurp
like,
your wisdom and insight
I was
there.
like, no,
Total
that's a
guess. Total
20%,
guess.
because access, and I see, because like I didn't want to be a runner. Everyone's like, oh, that's great, you found your passion. I'm like, found my passion. Like, I had no other choice. It was free and it cost no money. and there was access and at times objective, but I would never have chosen running and I couldn't have chosen any other sport if I wanted to. So good thing that I could run because otherwise I had no other choice. But like to do something like gymnastics or dance or it costs money. So I think there's several problems with this. And a lot of it is the American culture, not just American, but in general, and this pressure that of what does fitness look like? Because now it's not just elite athletes. This can happen to amateur people because there's a gym culture. Like 50 years ago, did people go to the gym like guinea pigs every day? No. Or that in order to be really good at what you do, like the best CEOs, they get up at 5 a.m., they run their 7 miles and then they go into the office all day. There's this whole culture, marathon, triathlon, ultra running. There's an entire community of influencers out there that their whole days are like, let's do this detox. Let's do this rim to rim 100 mile run. And I mean, I know this is my network. Like and that's why I recognize it so much. Cause I'm like, I know that it's toxic at a certain level. And there's more that we can be doing with our energy that actually touches people, helps people than just looking at a line on the road all day, or because that's also harmful to our health. And that's what's never really been studied is the long-term effects because humans, even if you look at the caveman days, we were not meant to be exercising at that level. We just weren't meant to do it. Our organs can't. And the reason it shows up so evidently in the female body is because women lose their menstrual cycle completely. And that is an insane red flag that says, my body is now shutting down all of the things that I do not need to do to stay alive, which means we're going to shut down everything else.
Yeah.
And through those years, your organs suffer, but they never saw what was going to happen long-term to these women. And I mean, in my documentary, I've have over, and of course my world is running, right? Over 50 of the world's top female runners of all time currently. And like some of the legends of all, you know, the mostly American legends, through years that are older than me, younger than me, that are going to Paris this summer, ones that are holding multiple US records and Olympic titles and world titles, and all of them. And this is the first time that all these voices have come together, because now all of the women that I talk to, we have all gone through the same thing. And all of these, again, like you're at millions of doctors, like what's going on?
Wow. That's just remarkable. I mean, basically
it's a hidden epidemic.
It is. And again, until I talked to you about this, you know, maybe a year ago, I mean, I just had no idea. I mean, I've never heard of this. And this
that's the problem. No one
so has. Profound. Yeah. And you think basically, I mean, how would you live your life differently if you knew, you know, as a little girl, that going the Olympic college route was going to change your destiny as a human being, as a woman? I mean, that's the decision, right? I mean, that's the risk.
And I don't want them to be lack of sports. Like, I don't want this to be like, no, we shouldn't compete in sports anymore.
Right.
What was, and then this is, you know, and I have the Olympic coaches in the film. I have the NCAA coaches from all over, medical experts. I'm not saying that to name drop, but I'm saying that because it is that much of an issue and that no one has talked about it, because no one's done it in a way that people are afraid of being blamed. Coaches, doctors, trainers, dietitians, the Olympic committee, like nobody wants it to be bad for sport. So I knew that, and this is where, you know, I knew I had to create something in a way that will get people on board.
Yeah.
It's not attacking anyone, because it's really not, it's, we have to change a narrative around what it means to be fit, what it means to perform, what it means to look like an athlete or to look fit. And that I hate to say it, because like, you know, everyone goes, well, we know we have to put a dietetics nutrition place and plan in place, and we have to have, you know, weigh-ins and all this kind of stuff. That is not going to solve the problem. That happened when I was in college. There's a secret narrative amongst athletes that is, I know that there's something wrong. Like, I know that that's not normal, but it means I'm elite training. Like, I know that these are things are happening because this is what it takes to be that way. And you can't simply slap a nutrition. Are you kidding? Like, everyone knows how to eat. Like, if you want, you can go online and find 1,000,000,000. It's not about telling someone eat more. It's not that simple. It's, we have to change the cultural narrative around what does it mean to be an elite athlete? What, or
so
even
you,
an elite athlete.
So you started that with this, so this documentary. So where are you with the documentary? I know you had you've had some fits and starts, and you had a premiere at the University of Texas. It was like, I think maybe last week. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I said that this was like something on the side project, and spent over COVID really, like, which was a whole obstacle trying to do, conduct all these interviews of elite athletes. And
so did you really kind of produce this thing? Were you the sort of the, you're the producer of the documentary. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a bold move, Amanda.
Well, no one knew about it though. So I was doing it in silence.
Yeah.
And which is what I typically like to do until something's ready. And so I interviewed over 60 of these top athletes, Olympic coaches, NCAA coaches. Never before have they had that many different Division I schools and institutions and medicals and hospitals.
Did anybody say,
film?
No, I'm not talking about it?
Yes. The original person I wanted to do this for, and I wanted her to be the face of it, she was my roommate in college, who is one of the most all-star US runners of all time. And I've seen her struggle more than I've struggled. And this was my, unfortunately for her, her career went longer than mine, which again, the blessing and the curse, right? Because I had another career because I got out so young. She did not. And I just saw what happened. Over again. And I just, I still, so I actually had the idea to make her the face. And when I went to her on this, she said, absolutely not. No way that I'm going to be the poster child for this.
Oh, wow.
And I also think that, you know, she was sponsored by Nike and they were in a lot of hot water over this. And so she, you know, I think that was a major part of it, was that she was not allowed by Nike to speak on this, which is going to, and so many others came forward, obviously. But even so, now I had trouble myself, which is ironic, right? I had all of these incredible women in the film, and yet I didn't want to own it and say that this was mine and I did this because I suffer from this, because I was afraid that it would hurt my career now. So, and it was very monumental to do a showcase at the University of Texas last week, because that's where I work. That's where that is my, I've been on that stage many, many times. I've given zillions of lectures there. I've never been so nervous to be in front of a room, any school, especially. I don't usually get stage fright like that. But it's different when it's so personal and when there's a stereotype involved that they're like, I was afraid that maybe, you know, the president would say, we have to take her down. Like, she's not mentally fit, or she's got physical illness.
Oh, my.
That we can't have her teaching into our thing. Someone just asked, podcast is sponsored. Oh, sorry.
Well, all they need to do is listen to our podcast episodes together, Amanda, and say, look, see, I'm mentally fit. I do the best shows with Mark. I get the most downloads.
No, but I'm, people are always like, well, this is not about marketing, this podcast. But no, I will say thank you for having me on here, because I would actually like to like figure out, like, what I'm actually at a stump, because I'm like, I just, as of in the past like month, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get in front of this. The reception has been incredible. We've had calls from the New York Times, Washington Post.
Oh, wow.
In the past, just since this last week. And I know that this is going to be as big as the concussion issue or bigger.
Oh, wow.
In an epidemic, the athletic director at University of Texas, one of the largest, you know, Longhorns, like one of the largest athletic institutions in the world, is behind this now. It has to be spoke. It is there. And I'm the only one that I know of that has been able to get every major voice and institution, all the red tapes, but I don't know how to market it. I don't know how to use marketing seems to me like, ugh, but also it needs to happen because I believe that's my purpose now.
Yeah.
Is I'm not a medical expert and I'm no longer an athlete, but I am a marketing person. So that's why I decided, I was like, well, film, people are interested in film, or like people are interested in events, or like what is going to make people, do we need to call it something different? Like people need to resonate, because whether you're a parent, whether you have kids, whether you are an amateur athlete, whether you're a regular exerciser, whether or not, or you know somebody, everybody is affected by this, and it's going to only get worse if we don't change the narrative around sports, especially in young people.
Well, let's talk about the marketing. And before we switch gears here a little bit, I want to remind everyone that we are sponsored by Brevo, which is a great marketing tool. I've talked about the different things it can do. And I wanted to mention that one of the things that makes it different is that it has a really great email marketing program. And the pricing structure is based on the number of emails sent, not the number of contacts stored. So that could be a big cost savings for business. And I hope you learn more. You can get started with Brevo for free by going to www.brevo.com/marketingcompanion. And if you want to sign up, use the promo code companion to save 50% on your first 3 months of the starter and business plan. So, you know, as you were speaking, I mean, one of the things I was thinking about is sort of the sea change with sports and mental health. Last year during March Madness, Powerade was one of the sponsors, and their advertisement campaign was about pause. Now, this is a brand that's about power and performance, and it was about stop and take a break. And their spokesperson was Simone Biles. So, you know, I do think at some point you need to get some of the big names behind it. But like, where are you in the medical research in terms of like what needs to change? Is there some things, is it just, you know, raising awareness of the issue is massive, but like on the concussion issue with American football, you know, there was decades of research, and then they made new helmets and they did more research. I mean, is there
research? Yeah.
All right. So the people that you're working with, are there sort of like countermeasures that we need to be learning about and implementing in these sports?
Yeah. So the research has been done for many years, to the extent that now, like I said, in 2014, the Olympic Committee passed accepted the diagnosis. Harvard, Boston Children's Hospital and Harvard Medical School have been at the forefront of this because their leader, Dr. Kate Ackerman, who was just named as she's the women's Olympic doctor for Paris this summer, who's also in my documentary, has been the lead, pretty much lead global researcher on this for like 20 years, and has been probably affiliated with almost every study and whatnot that I've ever seen. I mean, a lot have been done. There's been a lot of foundations projects. The problem is one really, while this is different than like, why I think this is so pivotal, it's like a concussion issue almost exactly in that it is preventable. Like, can it be fatal? Yes. That's why you hear about these like random heart attacks on the track. Like, I remember that was a fear when I was running, was like, oh, you so-and-so had a heart attack on the track, which I don't understand. She was 19 years old and like peak of fitness, because your organs, I mean, you're compromised. I think that it's not a lack, honestly, having studied this for so long, it's not a lack of research or scientific evidence or solutions. It's a lack of understanding of awareness and education. And the solution is not as simple as, okay, we're going to put parameters in place so they all have nutrition plans. This, the issue is that this is so psychological too. Back when I was running, I knew that it was not normal to be severely anemic. Like, why are you losing all this iron? And it was also not normal to be continuously stress fractured and also to lose a menstrual cycle. But when I went to the every doctor and all the coaches, like, I mean, every other girl, every other NCAA, Division One athlete, same thing. It was like, oh no, that's normal. There's a difference between it being normal and it being common. Was it common? Is it common? Yes. And it was almost the silent status symbol being like, yes, I'm an elite athlete.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And I knew, and I said this last week on stage, like, because we had a doctor on stage, we had, one of the doctors and the head of dietetics for sports performance at UT on stage. They are the experts. They're all like, yeah, this is what you have to do. The problem is athletes won't do it. Why? Because there's a certain psychology around what it takes to be fit, to be successful, to be performance. We see it in business all the time. Work harder, work more, work, blah, like what does success look like? Well, it's more money or whatever. In athletics, it's looking the part, winning more races, winning more games. And that
So,
has to change in the psychology.
what's the status of the documentary now?
The
I mean, is
documentary
this something that anybody can see and distribute?
Technically, yes. So it's an interesting story. The documentary, all the footage of over 60 interviews is all done. I met a Hollywood producer, motion picture producer, a couple years ago while I was working on this. I was working for him on some other projects, and he was like, "Holy shit, how the hell this is for real?" He actually was like, "This is not for real. You've got to be shitting me." And he called a friend of his who was the head coach, one of the head coaches at Stanford. And he said, "Is it like this? Like, she's telling me this." And I'm thinking, this is like, she's out to lunch. Like, what, why, how does no one know about this? And he said, "No, it's actually a huge problem." And he called me back and was like, "Let me see the foot. I want to see what you have." He watched all the footage and was like, "Great. I'll take this over for no fee, like just a percentage of what it sells for." He finished the documentary using my footage. And I saw it, and I have to say that I creative like it's not the vision that I saw. And I think a lot of it was cut out.
He wanted to make it Hollywood pretty.
Yes.
Yeah.
And which is great. And I understand that from a marketing perspective. The problem was that in doing so, the story that it told will lose the support of all of the institutions, all of the women in it. Because what it's doing is it's glamorizing this concept, and it's making it look like this only affects, I hate to say this, but like really attractive, fit, white women that are extremely well spoken and now a lot of them are doctors and CEOs and whatever, and they're all in this thing, and he only cut out almost everyone else. And so it's like one beautiful, well-spoken woman after another and her story and whatever. And which is, again, it's very watchable. And I have it, but I had to make a really kind of, to me, it was a more moral, ethical decision, which is like, if we really want real change, this is not the way to do. And Molly Bloom, actually, who did Molly's Game, Aaron Sorkin did Molly's Game, which won an Oscar and was a great movie. She's in the document. She's in my documentary. I didn't want another Molly's Game. That was not my goal. I don't care. I don't want to be famous. I don't like, not for that. I mean, that's not something I want to do. This is so I believe that what I needed to do was come back to the table. I have everything. I own everything. And what I decided to do was, let me talk. You see, the Longhorns were like, can we showcase this? Can we? And so I said, well, let's do something different. Let me pivot. Let me show an excerpt, a 10-minute excerpt of some of the strongest interviews. And we'll do a panel discussion, a live interactive panel, and see how it's received. And this was last week, because I knew that I needed to put it in front, like, ask your own audience. And we had, it was the most RSVP'd event at UT this year. Besides a like football game, but like for an educational event, there were so many people from the community, from the greater Austin community, and even the chief of staff of UT came. I mean, we had an incredible turnout, and the resonation was like beyond, like I said, so in media wise as well. And so now I want to figure out, do I want to recut the documentary? Do I want to do another campaign for it and then see what, do I want to bring on a big athletics, like a big, not athletic sponsor. I think a sponsor would be something more like a Whole Foods or a medical company or a hospital, more so than if Nike was smart, they would do it. But personally, I don't think that that's a good idea. So I need to figure out, I'm like, what is the best way forward?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I have an idea.
I can't wait.
Well, so I mean, we're kind of winding down on the time for this episode.
Talk so much.
but what we could do is open it up to the thousands of people around the world that listen to this show. And you all know how to get a hold of me, and it's easy to find Amanda. But so like if you were Amanda, you know, you've got this cause. It's an important cause. It's absolutely vital to millions of young people today that are involved in sports. And you know, she's sort of at a crossroads right now with her documentary. The message is ready to go. What would you do if you were Amanda? Let us know. Send us a message, and maybe that'll be our next episode. We'll talk about some ideas that came in from our fans from around the world. So yeah. So you can just businessesgrow.com is my website. Just send me an email through there and send me your ideas. And, you know, maybe we can help Amanda with this message. You know, Amanda, thanks so much for talking about this so openly, and certainly congratulations to you for the progress that you've made so far. And we're all in your corner.
Thank you.
We want to give me
the stage. I'm sure. I'm like, I hope we didn't lose all your listeners talking about this.
Oh, no. This, I'm sure this will be one of the most popular shows as it always is. So anyway, let's hear from you. What would you do if you were Amanda trying to get this idea spread? Would you involve coaches? How would you connect with young people in a way that's not scary? Would you try to connect with the brands who are sponsoring these big university programs? And you know, what would you do about the documentary? Let us hear from you. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time on the Marketing Companion.